Member-supported Jazz 90.1 proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415 or soundbites.org. Now, alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on Member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Good afternoon, Mr. and Mrs. American, all the chips in the PC. It is Saturday, the 7th of January, Anno Domini, yes, 2017. And you, you lucky people, you're listening to Soundbites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And it's 6 minutes after the hour. We're going to be bringing you news, use, things to choose. Nothing to lose. Kick off your shoes. Don't get the blues. Here comes the news. And in the words of Joey Brown, Happy New Year! Cheek to walk.
I thought you were doing your Frosty the Snowman. Happy birthday every time you came alive.
Right. All right, let's start with the news. Apple CEO Tim Cook's total compensation took a dive for 2016 as the company missed its financial targets for the year.
Yeah, I saw that article and, you know, I felt for him, but I was sitting.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
The company's earnings for the year to September 24th dropped 14% compared to a year earlier. As a result, Cook's total compensation dropped 15% despite a 50% rise in base salary. He certainly wouldn't have to start eating not ramen noodles. He made almost $8 million after all. But he and fellow senior executives lost out on a few million each because of the poor performance. Cook's compensation consists of a base salary and an annual cash incentive that can reach four times base salary if the company's revenue and earnings exceed the maximum goal set as they did in 2015, when Cook received well over $10 million. In 2016, by contrast, the incentive was only 1.79 times base salary, according to documents Apple filed with the SEC on Friday. Luckily for Cook, that million-dollar pay rise at the start of the year also receives that multiplier of 1.79 times. Without that, he would have made less than $5 million in total. Whew. Man.
I don't know if I can live on that little
Poor guy. Apple also provided compensation details for five other executives in his filings. They all made more than Cook. That puts total compensation for each of the five senior executives at around $22.8 million, down from $25 million the previous year. Cook didn't receive any additional stock awards in 2016, but he's still profiting from the award he received in 2011 when he became CEO. In August of 2016, the first $1.26 million of those stock units vested were worth $136 million. And there's more to come. Another 2.1 million units that have not yet vested will net Cook a further $237 million at their current price when they do. Of course, those compensation numbers are all provisional. They still require shareholder approval, something the board is, of course, and this is a shock to you, recommending. It is also proposing the shareholders continue to approve executive pay every year rather than every 2 or 3 years, as they might also choose to do. So, our poll of the week at soundbites.org, that is Bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you, is Apple's profit slump means a pay cut for Tim Cook. And your choices are, good, that's the way it should be. Well, that's a little harsh. It's not his fault, he's only the CEO. And who cares what Apple does? So far, there are 32 people who have voted, and good, that's the way it should work, has the most number of votes. Half of that then goes to who cares what Apple does, and only a couple people think it's not his fault, and nobody thinks it's a little harsh. And, of course, we know you'll have more to say about that. So if you scroll down on the right under Fascinating Stuff, you'll see the forums. A link to them in green, and then the first poll, the second forum set is poll discussion, and today's first, so far the first topic on the poll discussion is 7 Jan 17, Apple's profit slump means a pay cut for Tim Cook, and so far four posts have happened, three people, four posts, and you can join us there and leave your 2 cents. Or perhaps up to an entire nickel's worth of information. And then, of course, you can join us here by giving us a call at 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Or toll free at 1-800-790-0415.
At least it is based on performance. I remember reading on Stop the Cap where some cable executive, their company was near bankruptcy, but he left and he got his $50 million golden parachute.
Yep. Yep. No, I got to be honest. I think it's great that Apple actually connects compensation to performance. Mm-hmm. I think that's great. And yep. Every company should do it.
Yep.
We should do it as Americans, our Congress critters.
Still in all, I mean, the millions. We're talking about some friends about, you know, these salaries that people get. You know, it's like you say, after $1 million a year, really? Do you need that much more?
Well, I remember reading an article where they started interviewing people. You know, you make $20,000 a year, yep, and you're struggling. What do you think you would need to be happy? And they said 50. So then they went to the people who make 50. What do you think you would need? And it was 150. And so at every salary level, you think you need even more money because you start in, you know, the third car, you know, the bigger house. Mm-hmm. You know, I got $1 million house. My mortgage is $10,000 a month. So I need a $500,000 job to afford it.
Well, where this conversation went with my friends is we're talking about sporting events and that, you know, and like the average family of four, say, to go to like a football game. You know, that you might as well plan. Yeah. That's like a vacation.
We have movies. You know, dinner and movies is $100 these days.
Yeah, I mean, but to go to like a football game, you know, their tickets are $100 a pop.
And at the Super Bowl, you put a comma in that number.
Oh yeah, definitely. And I mean, and then
if you bought them ahead of time,
yeah, right. And then there's the parking. You know, they got to nail you $25 on that or not more, depending on the places. And then it's like, dang, you don't wonder. You know, like attendance is down? Yeah, people can't afford it.
That's right.
I mean, you know, you decide on that versus go to the football game or buy groceries.
Right.
Yeah. No, they didn't have it.
Right. I know which way I'm going with that
Yeah.
one. Well, and we see it. Yeah, we're seeing it all over. But there's a real, you know, there are very few companies like Ben and Jerry's,
mm-hmm,
where there's a cap. I think it's 50 times.
Yeah.
Ben and Jerry can only make 50 times what the person at the bottom makes, the lowest paid employee.
Mm-hmm.
And there are very few companies like that, you know. So either everybody gets a raise or nobody gets a raise.
And it kind of happens because every new job, you want more money than your last job. So, you know, and especially these real high, you know, high-value CEOs. Well, I made $10 million in my last job. So if you're going to woo me away, it's got to be at least $20 million. And then when the next company woos them away, mm-hmm, well, it's got to be $50
million.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, and of course, That all ties into the cost of Apple products, which some people say is higher than, you know, and I know we've heard this argument before. They use all top quality components. So if you built another machine with all those same top quality components, it would cost about the same. But you don't get a second choice.
Yeah, in the Apple world, Apple's the only supplier.
Right. So you either buy all high-end components or you don't get it. So if I want just something closer to a Chromebook, I yep. can't get it from Apple.
And we see the same thing across a lot of industries too. You know, there are
yes.
people that want a Mercedes. They don't want a Ford.
Right. But yeah. that's not the average car. Yep. You know, they sell.
In fact, I just saw an ad for Mercedes and this new Mercedes car. And the great thing about it is it's only $40,000.
Yes.
Oh, speaking of
Chromebooks, I can buy coming up on three of my car for that.
Yeah.
Speaking of Chromebooks, I just had a discussion with a friend at work. And they were talking about a Chromebook. And they go, well, sorry, but my wife is very paranoid about being hacked and that. And, you know, she's, you know, it seems every time she turns around, she's getting hacked. I go, you don't have to worry about it.
Yep.
Well, what do you mean? I go, there's no operating system to hack. Chromebooks do not get viruses. You can't get spyware, any of that stuff. It's only a browser.
Yep.
There's nothing to steal or anything else. It can't get anything. And it self-protects itself. If something tries to get into it and it doesn't match the original, it says no way and leaves it.
Right. To be absolutely clear, there is a minimal operating system. It's a Linux-based operating system. Yep. But it's just enough to run the browser.
Yep.
And if it did get hacked, just restart it.
Yeah.
And you're done. You're fixed.
Well, like that day you got hacked here.
Well, hacked. Yeah. I got a message that said your Windows machine.
This is Microsoft. You've got a Windows virus.
Yeah.
Sitting on a Chromebook.
Yeah. Yeah. Probably not. Thank you, though.
Thank you for your time and effort. And bye.
Yep. And we were talking about this before the show. You know, anything can get hacked, you know, in quotes. There's just after Christmas, it was a 6-year-old girl used her sleeping mom's thumbprint to buy $250 of Pokemon toys on Amazon.
Took 6 years old?
6 years old, took mom's phone, went over to sleeping mom, touched her thumb to the thumbprint reader on the Amazon app, and got into Amazon and started buying stuff. Because she'd apparently seen mom unlock her phone that often.
Yep.
Dang.
Yeah, it's
so the joke there is it was a hack, just not a remote hack.
Right. Well, yeah, the kid did it remotely, brother.
Yeah, and if someone has physical access to your devices, all bets are off.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah. Even your 6-year old.
Mm-hmm.
That's exactly right. There's lots of that stuff going around, but in terms of most of that, Chromebooks are pretty much clean. And the new versions of Chromebooks that are going to be coming out, there's some wonderful models, touchscreen models, flip models where you can fold the screen all the way around the back and turn it into a tablet. They're going to be able to run both the Chrome OS and Android apps.
So which one are you looking at?
Right now, the only one that they've announced is a Samsung, and it's a little pricey.
Oh, okay.
So I'm still waiting. Not that I wouldn't buy one, but I would.
Because mine supposedly is on the list.
Right, yours is, yes.
To get it.
Yeah, I was looking at the new ones, and so far the only one out is the Samsung, and it's very pricey.
Mm.
But that doesn't
because
mean I'm
not going to... Because they're catching on. Well, I was talking about book. Chromebooks are really catching on because they're like a form of tablet. They've come with a keyboard. They're safe. You don't have to buy an OS constantly every year, which now with 2017, we're all going to be waiting, you know, come mid-year, wondering what Microsoft is going to charge for the updates to Windows 10 and how long you're going to have before you're shut off.
Yes, and let's remember, people, Microsoft has stated for the last 2 years that their goal is for Microsoft Windows and Microsoft Office to become subscription services. So you will pay every year for the privilege of running your laptop or desktop. And if you stop paying, it stops working.
Mm-hmm.
So you better have your backups if you decide to stop paying.
Yeah.
I mean, that's
Your subscription will expire in the middle of that report that's due at 5 o'clock.
Yes, it will.
Oh, definitely.
That's absolutely a rule right there.
And that's why I think the Chromebooks are starting to get up there a little pricey because, look, you didn't see this Christmas big advertisements for the big PC boxes. You saw a few laptops, but mostly tablet ones.
Mostly tablets. And, of course, what we're seeing is these things are now priced in the tablet range, $400, $500, $700, $900. Because they have touch screens.
Yeah.
And, you know, if your touch screens cost more money.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're going to do Android apps, you want a touch screen. If you want that flip screen so it goes all the way around, you better be prepared to pay for that. They have more RAM. They have a bigger hard drive because you're going to want someplace to store, SSD card rather,
because
you're going to want someplace to store your apps, et cetera, et cetera. So. They're bigger, they're more expensive, they're faster, they're still cheaper than most laptops, and they're certainly cheaper than a laptop and a tablet. So we get that. Listen, we're going to take a quick break. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 19 minutes after the hour. You're listening to the very first show of the brand new year on Soundbites on Member Supported Jazz. 90.1.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ryan.
And at 24 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites, and you can join us at 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 1-800-790-0415. That's for those of you whose phones aren't frozen over. It's a little cool out there today.
Just a little.
Just a tadly bit.
And we just had happy solar perihelion day.
Right.
Well, we crossed our closest approach to the sun on January 4th, and so now we're moving away from the sun.
Right.
In the middle of winter, it's the coldest day of the year.
Right.
The axial tilt matters more than the few tens of thousands of kilometers closer to the sun we are.
Right. We're still, we're an AU away, so however that works. Okay, now here we've bashed a little bit of Apple. Let's bash a little bit of Windows. Windows 10's global growth slowed in December, but the operating system ended 2016 on more than a quarter of the world's personal computers. But in the U.S., Windows 10 continued to gain ground at a consistent clip. By year's end, it powered more than a third of all Windows PCs here. Windows 10 gained 0.6 percentage point in user share last month, ending at 24.4% of all personal computers. However, Windows 10 ran 26.6% of all Windows machines. The difference between the user share of all PCs and only those running Windows stems from the fact that Windows merely powers a slight 92% of all personal computers, not 100%. User share, and I hope that gap is growing. User share is an estimate of the proportion of all personal computer users who run a device powered by a specific operating system. Although Windows 10's month-over-month growth gain of 2% was only a third that of November, was still better than the prior two-month stretch when Windows 10 posted zero or negative growth. That September to October decline, the first ever for Windows 10, came after Microsoft halted the one-year free upgrade offer to consumers and many businesses. But in the U.S., Windows 10's increases persisted. Windows 10 accounted for more than a third of the visits to sites tracked by Digital and Analytics Program, DAP, which mines traffic from more than 400 domains maintained by U.S. government agencies, such as the Internal Revenue Service and the National Weather Service. The bulk of visits to DAP websites originated in the U.S. DAP measured Windows 10 share of all Windows at 35.8% for December, up from 34.4% in November. That 1.4% percentage point increase was also the difference between October and November. The United States has been Windows 10's stronghold since the operating system's mid-2015 launch. It's been a year and a half that we've had Windows 10. Yeah. With its domestic share of all Windows editions consistently running between a quarter and a third higher than globally. That's not surprising. Home turf has long been a bastion for Microsoft in general and for Windows specifically, with new versions of the operating system adopted and old ones discarded faster than the worldwide average. Even with the free upgrade offer, however, Windows 10 was unable to match the uptake of 2009's Windows 7, which last month again accounted for a majority, 53%, of all Windows. Yes, you heard that right. People still using Windows 7 are 53% of all Windows users. At the 17-month mark, Windows 10's global user share of 26.6% of all Windows editions was slightly behind Windows 7's 27% at the same point in post-launch time. So, which Windows version are you using and why? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299, toll-free. 1-800-790-0415.
We had to quote a new PC for a customer this week, and HP still had some new models that came with Windows 7.
Unbelievable.
And I wondered how, because it's been gone a year.
Yeah, right. And, year and a half. Well, it's gone a year, yeah.
Well, it's probably preloaded and been kicking around. They all of a sudden discovered a pallet full of them here or there, and offer them for sale.
Yeah.
Yeah, Microsoft originally said you can keep selling whatever Windows 10, 7 you have in inventory.
Yeah.
So you just can't put it on a new machine.
Yeah. No, so these machines could have been sitting around who knows where for how long.
Right. So for those of you who are still pining for the Fjords, give MacGav a call.
They'll get it done.
Yeah, right. I don't know if they'll be able to
support it in any way, or
give you a warranty for the operating system.
Just never connect to the internet, never put a third-party disk in, and you'll be fine.
Yeah. Or you buy...
Actually, no, it comes built in with Adware, doesn't it?
Right, it absolutely does. Mm-hmm. All you need to do is take it home and install Linux on it. You're good to go.
Mm-hmm.
We had the Google Chrome meeting, the Google, Rochester Google's meeting the other night.
Oh, yeah.
And we had several people who were also interested in Neverware's cloud-ready operating system, which is Chrome OS, essentially, for not Chromebooks.
Mm-hmm.
So if you've got an old laptop that you'd love to turn into a Chromebook...
Yeah, and you'd have all that extra storage.
You have all that extra storage. You have all the stuff you want to do. You have the advantages of the updates and blah, 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 all the advantages... Almost all the advantages of a real Chromebook.
Yeah.
And that also does not run Android apps yet. We don't know when or if that will occur.
I bet you it will.
Yeah. What Cloud Ready is doing is the Chrome OS is actually Google's version of the open source Chromium OS.
Almost sounds something like, you know, from... Superman.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
Right.
Planet Krypton.
Well, we seem to have socket errors for this thing. Who knows if I'm online for the IRC chat or not. So the Chromium OS is free, but it is also a pain in the butt to install. Jeez and crackers, it's not easy. So the folks at Neverware... picked it up and mm-hmm. and turned called it Cloud Ready. And essentially mm-hmm. what they've actually done actually is taken a version of Linux, which is what the underlying operating system is for Chrome OS anyway, mm-hmm. and put a front end on it that looks exactly like the Chrome OS, acts like the Chrome OS, works like the Chrome OS. So there's a little more underneath than you would normally have in a Chromebook, but mm-hmm. still... you just download it. You can install it on any old machine, turn it into a Chromebook. And I was kind of pleased to see that about let's call it 5 or 6 people had Chrome OS, the Cloud Ready OS on their
machines,
on old laptops. Yeah.
Cool.
And it's very cool. It's very fast. It's very easy to do. And again, it boots up and because it's not really fully Chrome, it doesn't boot up in 8 seconds. It takes 12 or 13 seconds. I know.
Matter of fact, I got an old laptop. The mouse pad doesn't work on it, but I could hook up a USB. That'd be fun to try. Because what it was is parts that I put together. And matter of fact, I online from Craigslist, I was missing the bottom plate, you know, to cover up the bottom part with the memory. So I found one on Craigslist. Somebody had it up there, and I think it was $6. So
you spent a whole $6?
Yeah, a whole $6.
Holy cow.
Got that. Well, it's like the other one, the other laptop that I told you, you know, the screen was bad.
Yeah. And you found a replacement screen.
Replacement was only, I think, 20.
Yeah.
And it's a 17-inch screen.
You know, I was looking at a couple old laptops. So when I say old laptops, I'm talking 10 years old.
Mm-hmm.
They're just sitting in my closet and not doing a thing. And I thought what would be great would be to open them up, pull out the old motherboard, and replace it with something like a Raspberry Pi.
Neat.
All you need are the connectors.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, it's going to take a 5-volt power supply, which I think is what the battery... already provides anyway.
Typically on the inside, yeah.
Yeah. And so all you need are the right types of connectors, and now you'll have a much more powerful and frankly somewhat lighter laptop all set up for you. And I haven't actually gone and looked yet, but...
Yeah, I love playing around with, you know, as you know, my Raspberry Pi.
Yep.
Finding different movies in that and... So cool. I get to stuff that, you know, I miss. No big deal. I can just go on there and because CBS, because I did cut the cord, you know, to get CBS, you're supposed to pay.
Right.
You know, and I want to watch.
Let me say that neither Jazz 90.1 nor we here at Soundbites condone stealing movies, music, television shows, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. What Dave is talking about is purely theoretical, hypothetical, and is nothing any right-thinking human being would ever do. Go ahead, Dave.
And available from a lot of legitimate streaming services now, too. The CBS app lets you watch some shows, although CBS
not
is...
Not all of them.
You're CBS right. is one of those that now have their own pay service,
yes.
Over the top. So instead of paying for CBS on your cable, you can pay CBS over the internet.
Right.
So most of the shows, if you want more than one or two old, you have to pay that subscription.
Yeah.
But a lot of apps. I use my Apple TV all the time to catch up on apps we missed. The DVR skipped something or was full. It's real nice to be able to catch up.
Because I like Code Black and trying to catch up with the old episodes because it comes on too late. I mean, you know, it comes on at 9 o'clock and, sorry, that's usually my bedtime during the week. And 4:30 comes off.
Yeah, I bet it does.
So, you know.
I sometimes get up to pee at 4:30. So I know that it's there.
Yeah.
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 All right. To the phones. Our first caller is our pal Linda from Greece, New York. Hi, Linda. What's up?
Hi, guys. How have you been?
Peachy. How you been?
Okay. I've got a question for you. I've got malware bites. I just had my computer cleaned by the Geek Squad online, and they put malware bites on it, which is great. Okay. I'm a senior. I'm 69 years old. And they recommended a password manager. I look at all of them. They're all confusing to me. Which do you think is the best password manager that I really don't have to do anything? Because I can't remember the passwords. But I need something that's really easy. But every time I try to download one, malware bytes, try to say that three times, comes up and says threat detected. So no matter which one I choose, I always get... threat detected. What do I do?
Well, first, if it's coming from a legitimate source and you're downloading it on purpose, you can say, okay, ignore that to malware bytes and it'll be fine. But in terms of what's a good password manager, there are a number of them out there. One of the ones that I like most is called EnPass, ENPASE. And it works on my phone and on my tablet and on my computer and everywhere else. And it keeps all of its information up on the web, so that you can, no matter where you are, you get the latest. If you make a change on one device, it shows up on the next device.
Did you mean NPASS, P-A-S-S, NPASS.io?
Yeah, what did I say?
S-E, NPASS.
Yeah, S-E.
Did I?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Well, it's NPASS.
Yeah.
It's just NPASS.
NPASS.io. We've heard really good things about LastPass, LastPass.com. One of the problems that you run into and what malware bytes might be catching for you is if you Google something like password manager, you're going to find a lot of stuff that may not be real, or it may be like a download site trying to capture your search request. And so here's a bunch of places you can download this from. And a lot of the download sites are less than reputable, and they'll wrap their downloads with malware.
Uh-huh.
And so you're usually best going right to the company that makes the program, so that you're getting it right from them instead of from one of a third-party download site.
So what you're saying is, instead of putting in password manager, go into Google and put in LastPass.
LastPass or EnPass, and that will take you to their company specifically and make sure
and then you can download their password manager from them.
Gotcha.
Yeah. So like I said, EnPass, LastPass are all, they're good products, and they're very well thought of, very reputable. One of the nice things about EnPass is it even has an extension for Chrome. So, you can get it everywhere, make it do everything everywhere, and blah, blah, blah,
okay,
blah.
But are they easy to use? Because I read these things, I'm going, you know, it boggles the mind. Are they easy to use?
Yes. Here's the deal. Let's talk about any one of these. Hang on, Linda. We got to take a break, but
okay,
stay on the line. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you 39 minutes after the hour. The very first sound bites of 2017 on Jazz 90.1.
It's America's longest running computer show. Back to more sound bites with Nick, Dave, and Steve. Next on member supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 43 minutes after the hour, we have Linda from Greece on the line. Are you still there, Linda?
Yes, I am.
Okay, here's the way that something like EnPass works. You open up EnPass, and it asks for the master password.
Mm-hmm.
And when you do that, you see a list of all of your passwords, which you can search, by the way. So let's say I forget my password for Google Docs.
Uh-huh.
I can search for Google or Docs or Google Docs, and up comes that set of passwords. I click on the one I like, and it shows me my username, my password, and everything else that I've put in there, including a note function. So if I want to write a note to myself about that, I can do that. And then every time you go, you add a new place, you can add that place to your list in EnPass. And LastPass works very much the same way. They all work very much the same way. You add your new thing to it. You can put in your username and your password and your hints, your security questions, everything in there. And then anytime you go to a site, all you have to remember is that very first password that lets you into EnPass.
Yeah, your master password. That's the one password you can't forget.
Okay, so all I have to do is create a master password, you know, and I saw there were a few sites that said you didn't even have to create a master password. Is that safe?
Well, here's that deal. Your browser can also remember passwords.
Yeah.
And that's separate from something like EnPass or LastPass. That's built into the browser itself.
Yeah, I know. I've gotten a few things up, and it says, do you want me to save this password? But I have got things like LifeLock and all that, which doesn't save passwords. Now, would LastPass even save passwords for LifeLock? Or would I still have to remember those passwords?
You can put into it any passwords you want, any passwords to anything. You can put your safe combination, your locker combination for high school. It doesn't matter. Anything you want to put in there, it's just another entry in the system that you do by hand.
Okay.
So once it's in there, it gets saved wherever you decide to save it. I personally saved mine to my Google Drive. And so once it's in my Google Drive, that means any device that has access to my Google Drive and has EnPass on it, I can access that stuff.
Okay, one more question. Okay, I download that. Now, if I go into, let's say, LifeLock, do I have to go into LastPass, or can I just go into LifeLock and do that? Or do I always have to go into LastPass to enter LifeLock? Do you understand my question?
I do. And yes, with EnPass, you would have to open it up and read out the password and type it in. With LastPass, I believe it does autofill.
Well, there's basically you use your web browser to go to the LifeLock like you normally would, and there's a new icon for LastPass or for EnPass. You had the Chrome extension, you said, too, right? Yeah. So you get a new icon where you click that, you know, the LastPass icon, and it will fill in your password for you.
So the first
time you go to that site after you install LastPass or EnPass, you'll have to tell it to remember the password, and then the successive times it will fill it in for you.
LastPass sounds like something probably that I would be interested in, because I'm not very good with master passwords.
Well, you would have to know your master password no matter what else you have.
Okay. Now, where would you suggest I save the master password?
Well, that's hard, Linda. Okay, you're probably going to have to write that down somewhere.
The only way they can get in my iPhone is if they have my fingerprint. Would that be a good place to store it?
Yes.
Okay.
But every now and then, your iPhone is going to want your passcode also. You can't use just a fingerprint. It also asks for the passcode every now and then.
No, I know. Yeah. I know, because sometimes it'll say, put in your passcode, which yep. I know, and I've done that.
Yep.
Yep. So saving your master password in your phone is not ideal, but certainly better than a lot of other choices.
Yeah. But as I said, I set up my fingerprint on my iPhone. So right. that, you know, right. unless they cut my thumb off or they don't know which finger I used, you right. know, I find that very secure.
Yep, it is very secure. Yep.
Okay.
All right.
Okay. Thank you very much, gentlemen.
Excellent, Linda. Have fun.
You too. Bye.
Yeah, we're all at the point where we have so many different passwords that it's important that we save them somewhere where we'll remember them.
And one of the things that we've run into in our store a few times is when someone passes, their spouse can't get into any of their stuff. And so you may want to, you know, write down your master password, you know, your Apple ID, your Google ID, you know, Amazon ID, things like that. Put it in a safety deposit box, leave it with your lawyer that you trust. So that, you know, in the event of you know, one of the spouses passing, the other spouse can get into your stuff.
Yep.
Especially if, you know, if one spouse does all the, like, the online banking and takes care of all the bill paying and stuff like that, you know, suddenly they're not doing that anymore and you don't know any of the passwords they used.
Yeah, that's one thing that Lori and I had. We had our passwords locked up into a lockbox type of thing, because just in case.
Right. Right.
And darn glad I had it, because after she passed, I had to get into a number of stuff that she handled. I mean, she used to do it all. So.
Yep. And yeah, now you needed that information.
Yeah. And it's critical, because otherwise they could sit there and go, I'm sorry, I don't know you.
One thing that we did at RIT was both Dave and I wrote out our passwords, typed out our passwords, and sealed them in an envelope, signed the back of the envelope across the flap, right? Mm-hmm. And then gave it to the president's administrative assistant for her to put in the safe mm-hmm. there. And so if anything happened to us, and every time we changed them, we changed that envelope.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
One of the things I've also heard is give part of the password to, like, each of your kids. So one of them can't get into your stuff, but it takes all of them to get together to recreate the whole password.
And then remember to be nice to your kids.
Yeah, or that'll force them to get together after you pass again.
All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is our buddy Al from Rochester, New York. Hi, Al, what's up?
I'm great, guys. Well, welcome to the new year.
Thank you, you too.
Hey, I want to piggyback on your conversation with Linda.
Yeah.
I'll have to start off by saying I'm a LastPass user for a couple years and love it.
There you go.
For someone like me with hundreds of passwords and varying levels of paranoia, wonderful product.
Yeah, it is.
However, as much as I love it, and understanding where Linda's coming from, because I've heard her on the phone before, I'm not sure I'd recommend it to her. It's a little complicated for the average user. I think it's a stellar product, and their security is the best, but it's a little tough, I would say, for a new user, unless there's someone standing by their side and walking them through it.
Okay, which would you recommend?
I can't. I was trying to look at the website for NPass that you mentioned, but I can't see enough of it to really give an opinion.
Yeah.
But I mean, LastPass is marvelous, and the fact that, and for those of other people who are listening who are sort of operating at a little different level, I mean, the ability to put in a master password. You open up Firefox, you turn on LastPass, give it the master password, and then if you want to go to eBay, you go to eBay and Firefox, and LastPass will pop up and say, here's the logon password, and if you want to use it or not, your choice. Or you can use their own pull-down list of sites and say, LastPass, take me to yahoo.com, and it'll say, okay, you've got three different identities, which identity do you want to use? And that's wonderful.
But mm-hmm.
setting it up and maintaining it, there's a little bit of a learning curve, and
maybe. The nice thing is there's a bunch of free password managers. I did post a link to a PC Magazine review of them. LastPass is free, EndPass is free, so you can try it. And if it isn't easy enough for you to use, you can always uninstall it and try another one.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's certainly the way to go. I mean, the premium for LastPass, again, for the rest of your audience, you know, $12 a year, now you can share your account amongst any other device you've got a Google login for. So I've got 3 other computers and 2 tablets and 3 phones, and you know, I change the password in one and it affects all of them. So it's wonderfully handy.
Yep.
Right.
But it's not a beginner tool. I would love to have someone recommend a beginner tool, because I've got more than a few family members and relatives who could use it. But on the other hand, I also want something that's as rock solid and secure as LastPass is.
Yeah. Now, Firefox has its own password manager built in. That might be a choice. It's built in. It's not an add-on. It just works for you.
Mm-hmm.
Apple has their own password manager built in, Keychain. If you're using only Apple devices, that's already there, and you're probably already using it without realizing it. So that might be something too. It's when you're crossing platforms that you often need a third party device. So if you have a Windows computer and an iPhone or a Mac and an Android phone, then you need something that runs multiple OSs.
Two things about Firefox is password manager. Again, nice tool, well made, well executed, but I've never read anything about anyone really taking it to task and seeing how sturdy it is.
Right.
So can't say anything there. But the one thing I would caution people on, especially if you have multiple devices, because they do let you share password manager vault amongst all your different devices, is that if you use the password tool in Firefox, they do not force you to create a password on it, a master password, which is error number one.
So anyone sitting down at your computer can look up all your passwords.
Right. So if you're going to use it, you got to create a master password. Second is, if you share that password vault with another device, such as your cell phone, you can share that vault on your cell phone. And again, it will not prompt you to create a master password. You need to make sure you create a master password on your cell phone also, or else you're just opening the door.
Right.
So, again, I would love to have other people call in and give their opinions. And if they found an easy tool for the beginner, non-technical, I'm not interested
in. Yep. No, I agree with you. The problem is, I don't know how non-technical you can make it and still keep it secure and safe and blah, 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 blah. Right?
That's exactly true.
Yeah. So I'm not sure.
Okay, I'll leave you alone, but thank you, guys.
No, thank you.
To anyone else, please chime in.
Yep. All right, thanks.
Okay, bye.
Have fun.
Yeah, it's always tough to try to make a complex thing simple, and computers are trying to be simpler and simpler and simpler, and sometimes it's too simple, and then the bad guys get in because it's too easy to get. What was it, Microsoft Bob? If you forgot your password, if you typed your password wrong 3 times, it looks like you forgot your password. Here it is.
Right, it would tell it to you.
I don't know if the phones are acting up or what, but I had 2 folks on hold. So if you got hung up on, we didn't touch anything, but
please call back.
Yeah, please.
Yeah, absolutely. We had a little issue, but that's all right. We'll get to everybody who calls back.
Mm-hmm.
Password managers are, by definition, fairly difficult if they're good, right? Because the ones that really work are a little bit difficult to use for the rank beginner, and I get that. I do understand that.
Just make the same password everywhere.
Stop that.
No, do not make the same password everywhere.
Right. Somebody's going to cut that out and post it somewhere and say, Steve Ray. Make sure you say it's Steve Ray. Yeah. It was Steve Ray. Who says, and we're all saying no, and then when you're done with that, no, and after that, no.
And maybe no?
And maybe after that, no.
Okay.
Because
we've
said this before, all passwords must be unique for every site you go to, and clearly Linda's doing that.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
She just needs to keep it. Now, and like I said, when I was working, I remembered 47 passwords on a daily basis. Now it's a little tougher because I don't use them every day.
But if she's in her own home, you know, she could do a spreadsheet and just, you know, write them down there.
Well, the problem there is, yep. is does she have a laptop or a tablet? And if she keeps them on that, anybody can see them.
No, yeah. What I'm saying is print it off. Print it off.
And seal it in the envelope.
Yeah,
idea.
Keep it yep. somewhere, you know.
And I'm, then and keep that. The only copy of that spreadsheet should be on a thumb drive, which you never let out of your house.
The problem there is remembering to update it. We have people come in with their password books, and they don't remember when they changed it or what this password was. So when you change your password, put a date on the page and maybe cross off the old password. But the problem is it may not be you that loses the password. It may be the other end. Yahoo just lost a billion passwords. And so if you use that same Yahoo password somewhere else, you're in trouble, and then not by your own fault.
Right. All right. Our first hour is done, but thank heaven we have a chance to fix it in the next hour. So stay tuned. We're going to take a slightly longer break. Listen to our underwriters' stories, and we'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, with Steve Ray, with me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 59 minutes after the hour. You're halfway through the first show of 2017. It's Sound Bites on the truly great and truly grateful to be member-supported Jazz 90.1. Stay tuned. It's an entire hour of this nonsense left to go. Don't go away.
Computer talk you can understand. More Sound Bites is next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
WGMC Greece, Rochester. A public service of the Greece Central School District. Jazz 90.1.
On Instagram at WGMC Jazz 901.
Welcome back to America's longest-running computer show, Sound Bites, on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Get online now. Call 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415. Or submit your question by email at soundbites.org. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 4 minutes after the hour, we are Sound Bites, and we have Andy from Greece, New York on the line. Hi, Andy. What's up?
Hey, Nick. Just to follow up on the last two conversations here. I hear about the password and LastPass, and you know, the one gentleman says it's extremely good and all that stuff. I got a little voice in my left ear that says, this is a great idea. You wouldn't have to keep writing them down. You wouldn't have to remember them. The machine would do it for you, so forth and so on. Well, the paranoid voice in my right ear says, but you're leaving it on your computer. And if somebody hacks your computer, how is that secure?
Right, right. Well, the thing is, something like NPass is encrypted with your password. So how good is your password, which tells you how strong the encryption is, which tells you how long it would take them to break it. Right? So, and the thing about NPass is, of course, I actually keep that up on my Google Drive. And again, if somebody were to steal it from my Google Drive, they would still have to decrypt it from my unreasonably long, I admit, password.
Okay.
So so your password vault is safe by the encryption of the vault itself with your master password. That's why you have to remember your master password. If you forget that, all your other passwords are lost.
Okay. So the encryption makes the file unbreakable?
No, there is no such thing as unbreakable.
Not breakable in a reasonable amount of time.
Right, not easily breakable by the average human being. You know, if the NSA, well, the NSA probably already has it, so they don't need to break it. But if they didn't have it, they could break it fairly easily. But the basic idea is that most of these programs, and NPass is one of them, encrypts your data using your password as a key. So if you use a crappy password, you have crappy encryption.
Okay, so it has an algorithm that takes your master password and then creates the encryption based on that.
Right.
So it's a unique encryption for you.
Right, and no one else has that encryption.
Unless they used your password.
Right, right, right. So if your password is weak, if your password is password, pretty much anybody's going to get it. But if your password is complex, and you know by this time that I don't mean 87J left elbow. What I mean is, you know, a long password, multiple words, numbers, caps and lowercase, symbols. So if your password is complex, as in, hey, exclamation point, this is my password and you'll never get it. Ha, 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 123. With appropriate capitals and everything else in there. That's a complex password and fairly guarantees that your password will be difficult to crack and in point of fact, in general, impossible for the average user. Like we said, if you've got a supercomputer, if you're a governmental agency, then you can probably crack it in a reasonable amount of time. The average person cannot. Until we can all afford quantum computers. The Raspberry Quantum, until we can all have that, then it's going to be a fairly secure password.
So as long as they don't tick off Mr. Putin and he turns his hackers loose on me, then I should be okay. Huh?
That's right. Stay on his good side. And you should be fine. And, of course, use a complex password.
For the master pass. Now, the program itself creates, or you can create, very complex passwords on its own, correct?
Right. And yes. And technically, you don't know what the other passwords are, so no one can beat it out of you.
Right. It can create complex passwords in various types of various lengths. You can say, I want it to just be complex. I want it to be long. Remember, complex in the sense that you're thinking of it is not as important as long.
Okay.
Because what computers don't speak English.
Right.
So 7 left elbow J and 123 are exactly equivalent as far as a computer is concerned.
Mm-hmm.
What's important is how long it takes them to break each character.
And the way you see them breaking passwords in the movies is completely wrong.
Yes.
You know, they don't break it character by character and, oh, the fifth character is a 6. No. They try the password and it's all or nothing. Is this right or is this wrong?
Mm-hmm.
So they don't know how long the password is. They don't know how many characters it is. They don't know the character set.
And that's they don't know whether it's upper or lower
right.
case.
That's why
in
we
some
say
case.
Uppercase, lowercase, add a yeah. number. If you just use lowercase, there's only 26 possibilities.
Yeah.
Use upper and lowercase, you're 52. Throw mm-hmm. in numbers, you're 62. Throw in symbols, you know, you're in the 80s.
Yep. Yep.
And then you multiply that by the number of characters you made, and now you can see how long it would take to do something. In fact, if you go to grc.com, GibsonResearchCorporation.com/haystack.htm, it will give you a page. And, of course, this is Steve Gibson's. You actually have to scroll down to see what you want to do.
Mm-hmm.
But you have a thing called a haystack. It's how well hidden is your needle. You can put in a password or something similar to your password if you don't trust them. And it will tell you how long it would take to break it using brute force.
Yeah, I've tried that. I've used Gibson's tools to see how good my network is at home and things like that. Because it'll try and get into your network, and it'll come back and say, I got no replies at all from your network. So that's a good thing.
Right. Well, this is a different product. It's called the Haystack. And basically, and I just put in the word hello as a password. With an online attack, assuming that they're not at my machine, right? They're doing it over the internet.
Mm-hmm.
Take 3.43 hours to break that word. If I add an exclamation point, it takes 1.36 years. If I make the H a capital, it takes 12 years. So you see, that's the more and more of that you do, the bigger the space mm-hmm. becomes. If I add a number to that, it now takes 22 centuries. So if you make a long password with a combination of upper and lowercase numbers and symbols, it will take an exceptionally long time.
Yeah, numbers, and symbols is the key.
And the one thing that we've been trying to train ourselves is stop saying password and use passphrase, because the bad guys will feed a dictionary into these cracking tools. So if your password is a word in the dictionary, then it will be guessed very quickly because it's in the dictionary. So use two different words separated by numbers and symbols so that it isn't a dictionary word.
And upper and lowercase.
And upper and lowercase. And then it becomes a long password where length is much much better than complexity. So it doesn't need to be something you have no hope of remembering.
Well, I get that part.
So here's an example. There's a thing called rainbow tables. And what they've done is they've taken, everybody knows by this point, Microsoft's algorithm for creating passwords. Everybody knows it. And so what they've done is they've taken every conceivable password from A, AA, AAA, et cetera, and created the hash of that and put it into a table. And so now all they have to do is grab your, if they can grab your password hash off of your computer, which is actually fairly easy to do, they just, now it's just a database lookup. And they have your password. And the last time I looked at them, they were up to 17 characters. So if you really want to keep your Windows machine secure, you need at least 18 characters, and it's probably much more by now. So that's for Windows. Obviously, obviously, if you're using Linux or a Mac, it's a different algorithm. Linux is different altogether. Chromebooks are different, blah, 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 blah. But
on the other side of the coin is there have been so many password breaches that there is a really good data. There's over 2 billion known passwords. There's a good database of what common passwords are. So the bad guys try those first.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Back to the LastPass or NPass. Once it's got the passwords done, can it be printed out?
Well, once you've done it, I don't have my LastPass. I have it on my phone, but I don't think it has that feature. I don't know if it prints out a table. That would be beautiful. Because then you could print out a table and, like we said, lock it in your safe or whatever it is you're going to do with it.
If you're letting it create the passwords, and all you have to remember is your master, and it's creating nice, long, complex passwords for everything.
Yep, the answer is yes. You can print your password list if you want to.
From LastPass.
From LastPass, yeah.
Yeah, well, that makes it worth it, because then if the computer crashes or the hard drive gets destroyed or et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, and you're trying to scramble to find things, you've at least, if your hard drive goes south or your
right,
SSD drive goes south before you can get a replacement, you got to go pay some bills, you're in trouble.
Of course. No, I absolutely understand that. Theoretically, you can export, and I'm trying to see, like I said, I don't have it on this machine, you should be able, I know you can export it. What I don't know is what you can export it to. If you can just export it to a text file, then you win.
Mm-hmm.
Password audit, much improved, blah, 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 blah. I don't know. It doesn't say. But, yeah, that's the thing I would look for along with everything else.
Yeah, it can export to a CSV or a binary pocket format, which is their encrypted.
Again, that's LastPass, not MPass, right.
So every program is slightly different, but...
Well, CSV, then you can drop it into a spreadsheet, clean it up and print it out, and then don't save it on the computer, but you've got a hard copy and you're ready to go.
Exactly.
Yep.
Or you can put it on a thumb drive and a hard copy, whichever.
Right.
Totally paranoid.
Yeah.
I've been hanging around you too much. I'm getting there.
Clearly you are.
You're learning.
It does have export of data, and so one nice thing about NPass is you can sync to Google Drive, Skybox, Box Folder, Dropbox. And so it pretty much does a little bit of everything. NPass and LastPass are both excellent products. As long as you're careful, right? As long as you don't write down and hand to other people your password, your master password.
No.
Print it on the back of your phone.
Print it on the back of your phone, right?
Or the bottom of your keyboard.
But that's the way that works, and it should be fairly secure.
Well, that works. Okay.
Okie doke.
All right. Yeah. Thank you because I kept wondering how it could be secure on the computer. But if they're basing their algorithm around uniquely around your master password, then it becomes very difficult to get into.
Exactly.
Okay. Well, thank you, gentlemen. As always, you're a fountain of knowledge, and I do appreciate it.
We're a fountain of something. Thank you. Have fun, Andy.
Yep. Bye.
We'll see you next month at Rochester Googles. Andy was one of the people at our Rochester Google meetings.
I was going to go to that. And then I also realized it was the same day as the Racket Club winter meetings.
Oh, there you go.
And I was going to go to that. I ended up getting stuck at work and missed them both. So, and it was getting kind of cold and snowy, so I was...
Well, there is that.
Yeah.
We're at that part of the year where it was a little... going was definitely something you had to deal with, that kind of stuff. All right, to the phones. Our next caller is Tim from Webster, New York. What's up, Tim?
Yeah, hi, guys. Happy New Year.
You too.
I've been a victim. I remember, I think it was a while back, of browser hijacking, which mm-hmm. if you've ever been through, it's just a ridiculous pain in the butt. So I've always been very paranoid about letting any of my browser, do you want to keep this password? Do you guys think that that's safe and secure? You know, when it prompts you in the upper left, do you want to...
Ish.
Which browser?
Like Mozilla, like Firefox?
Firefox. It's stored in the browser. It's not stored on the web page. So it's in a separate area of the browser's memory.
So even if someone has that ability to hijack, they can't access that?
Technically, no, but okay. They could put up a fake message. You're logging into PayPal. Please give me your password.
Right.
But then you would know you're not logging into PayPal.
Right. Gotcha. Okay.
So basically, here's the deal. In Firefox specifically, yeah, the names and passwords are stored in a file called logins.json, and those are encrypted with an encryption key.
Even without a master password?
And when you use a master password, that's an additional level to the same encryption. So if you use a master password for the system, then you should be pretty secure.
Can I ask another question after the...
Yes, hang on. We're going to take a quick break, back in just a couple of minutes. Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, Tim from Webster, and you. It is 19 minutes after the hour. It is Soundbites. It is member-supported. Jazz 90.1.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 24 minutes after the hour, we have Tim from Webster, New York on the line with his next question.
Yeah, now why isn't there some sort of an industry standard way of not allowing more than, say, 6 to 10 attempts at a password? I mean, are these hackers just trying repeatedly with some sort of bot?
Yes.
Okay.
That's exactly what they're trying.
And more often than not, they're not trying a live online attack on say, PayPal's website. They have captured their database. And so that was a big thing with Yahoo. The Yahoo database was lost. And so at the hacker's leisure, they just try to log into the database. They're not doing it live online.
Right. And so, but here's the thing. Let's say Yahoo had not been hacked and lost, 2.5 million passwords at this point? 2.5 billion passwords at this point? Let's say they had not been. If you have a Yahoo password, by the way, I hope you've changed it recently.
Yeah, I did.
Let's say that they had not been stolen, right? So they've got 2.5, they've actually got more like 5 or 4 billion people on their machines. If they allowed only 6 attempts to enter a password before they locked the system, then think of the number of people every single day. No, think of the percentage of people every single day who would fumble finger their password and lock themselves out and now have to call. Can you imagine the size of a call center when you've got 4 billion people on your system?
It just takes a little bit of personal responsibility.
Yeah, sadly, yes.
Well, and average folks that aren't computer savvy, and I forgot my password, or I typed it wrong, and now I can't get in, and I'm mad. GRC did a an episode, and I'm trying to find it, on corporate password policies, and somebody put together a list of most of the top 1,000 companies and what their password policy is. How many characters have to be in a password, how many mistakes you get before it locks you out. And they found several companies that allow a two-character password.
Yep.
Which means they test for one character and say that's not enough, but a two-character password is okay. And it's because they don't want to have
many,
that tech support.
And many places still have legacy systems, as they're called, where you have ancient machines that haven't changed since the 70s. And they have 6 or 8 character passwords. And so that's the most that they can put in their policy without scrapping those systems.
My goodness.
Right. So why they don't say legacy systems can have 6 or 8 and new systems have to have 12. But okay, fine. And humans are as humans are. And the people who are running these corporations are mostly old white guys like me, who don't want to have to remember passwords because that's newfangled crap and we don't like it.
My bank does a phone authentication phone call with me.
Excellent.
And I love that. Yeah.
Yep.
So I wish, actually, maybe all my, I have 4 or 5 Yahoo accounts, I maybe wish they did that too. I wouldn't mind.
Well, but then again, you know, it's 4 billion people. How many people do they have to have sitting in a call center in India? Excuse me, in a call center somewhere.
Right.
So it all becomes a matter of numbers.
Okay. Okay.
You know, and they want to, and they are, there's a, that difference between what's an acceptable risk, right?
Yeah.
The risk that was not acceptable, of course, was somebody stealing 2.5 billion of their passwords. But we'll go past that by now.
Wouldn't it be reasonable, though, to have an industry standard of like 10 attempts or you're locked out for 6 hours? I don't know.
Yeah, yes. I completely agree with you. But
10 does seem to be common.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's semi-common, but the problem then becomes I call you up and say I'm using your system and now I'm locked out for 8 hours, but I've got an email I have to answer today for my business.
Yeah, I can.
Well, first, what the hell are you doing using Yahoo for your business, and secondly, learn your stinking password.
Yeah, absolutely.
I get it, but that's, you know, the other choice is they then get sued.
Right. That's a good point. Excellent. Okay, just one last point. I just wanted to mention the whole Windows subscription thing and the Linux option. For people like me who are total newbies to that concept, it would be so awesome if there would be like a class or something that would sprout up that would help show people how to download that and use it. It just seems like there's an opportunity there because I don't want to pay for Windows and I don't want to deal with that anymore. But I don't know anything about
it. I would give
Linux.
That class.
Yeah, there you go.
Oh, let me think
sorry,
about that.
You. What'd you say?
I would give that class. Let me think about
exactly.
that. Let me think about that, where I could do that.
Yeah. Awesome. Okay. Thanks
and
for
how.
Your time.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you, Tim.
Okay, yeah, bye-bye.
Give me a little something to do in my retirement.
And I found the...
charge people and actually make money.
Yeah,
that would be okay.
That'd be nice. I found the spreadsheet I was looking for from the GRC episode. It was actually put together by Dashlane, who is a company that makes a password manager.
Right.
And they score the minimum password length. Is your password visible during entry? Some sites are yes. You can see the password as you're typing it, which means the person over your shoulder can see that, or the person across the hall with binoculars can see your password.
Or across the street.
Or across the street, yep. That was a big big thing with PIN codes on ATM cards.
Mm-hmm.
Is someone, you know, people are always, you know, making sure there's no one behind them when they type their PIN. How about the guy, you know, across the street, you know, a mile down the road with a high power telescope? You know, he can see your password now. And so it's it was interesting how the companies got ranked. Apple was ranked at number 3, Microsoft at number 82.
Wow.
Let me see why Microsoft got ranked so low. One of the problems is there's so many things in the chart.
Well, yeah.
Yeah.
All right, let's
And so I'll post this link if anyone wants to see it.
Wants to play with the data. It's the best part of data.
Yeah.
Back to the phones. Our next caller is Vic from Dayton, Ohio. Vic, what's up?
Hi. Well, it's pretty cold here. I assume you have about the same.
Yeah, we're freezing to death. It's 19 degrees here.
I share that with you.
Yeah. Okay. Well, you guys are getting hit hard, aren't you?
Oh, excuse me?
You guys are getting hit hard, aren't you? Or are you north
really,
of that a little
here.
Bit?
But yeah. It's going to happen. Yeah. There's no way to avoid it.
You're in Ohio. What do you expect?
Yeah.
Exactly.
Wait a few seconds. It will change.
Yeah. What can we do for you, Vic?
Well, I want to share some information with you, and it might be helpful that people know which passwords are stored in your browsers.
Yes.
Yes.
There is an interesting tool from Nirsoft. I'll spell it.
Yep.
Nirsoft.net.
I use that tool all the time. When
you know about web browser passview.
Yeah, people who forget their password, many browsers store it in Windows.
Right.
And so I, MailPassView and
I have a bunch
of really, really cool tools. The problem that I always run into is that the antivirus program on the computer will put up, giant red warning flags. This is a hacking tool.
Yeah.
Well, I guess it is. If someone else puts it on there, but I guess I'm a white hat, not a black hat. But I can be a gray hat in the middle.
You roll the dice, you take your chances. Mm-hmm. So,
exactly.
I get through and you didn't.
Anyhow, if you want to see your passwords, what actually is stored, that would be the way to go. They have, again, other tools like that to reveal passwords.
Right. And you may have passwords for sites you don't use anymore that can be deleted.
Yep, exactly. Now, to prevent some of this, there is an interesting program called Sandboxy.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you're familiar with that or not. But Sandboxy puts your browser basically in a virtual environment. So anything that happens on the Internet, you have the opportunity to review. If you want to save that item, folder, file, whatever it is, or delete it. So basically it makes you bulletproof. The decision is up to you. And you go to a website, and well, look at all the files this website downloaded that I didn't know about. And do you want to keep them or delete them?
Yep. And many browsers do their own Sandboxy now. So Sandboxy will basically put your browser in a sandbox so
right.
no one else can get in and play. Many browsers are doing Sandboxing themselves
right.
between browser tabs.
Yep, exactly.
But not with the operating system.
Of this tool, and there's also a paid for version. It's not particularly easy to use. You have to really scratch your head, so it takes a little bit of reading. I would suggest the paid for version. It's only a few dollars.
Yep.
But if you have that, your burst is basically bulletproof, but you have to do the deciding whether you want to keep these files or delete them. And that's it.
Yep.
Right. Absolutely. Very nice. As Steve said, many browsers nowadays do sandboxing internally, so one browser tab cannot see what's on another browser tab,
right.
but that doesn't prevent them from doing things in the operating system itself,
right.
and that's what a product like Sandboxy deals with.
And in many cases, the exploit happens in a plugin. So like the Flash plugin is exploited, and it crosses the sandbox because Flash has its own sandbox.
Right.
Yeah. Well, Flash is another story all by itself.
Yeah, we should stop using Flash. Just say no.
Just say no. I actually updated my Windows laptop the other day, and apparently Flash updated. So I removed it. I thought, wait, why are you even on my machine? Get off.
And the latest versions of Firefox, Chrome, and Safari won't run Flash.
That's right.
Unless you really, 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 really tell it to.
Right,
And I think Microsoft Edge is going to do the same thing, but I haven't read that yet.
Microsoft Edge.
Chunk.
All right, well there you go. Those tools, Sandboxing in particular, will save your life.
Yep.
And if you want to see what's on your computer as far as passwords, that is browser passwords.
Yep.
Go to Nirsoft.
Right. Perfect.
All right. See ya.
Thanks.
Bye.
Excellent.
Yeah, I always get frustrated when Norton pops up and says, "Oh, you can't download this file because it's a hacking tool," and then deletes it.
Right.
Quite often, there's no. This is a good program. I really do want to keep it. Don't delete it, please.
Right.
I have to use this because they forgot their password. Or what's even worse is when they say, "I don't have a password." Yes, you do.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. Or I don't have to type it in. That wasn't my question. You don't have to type it in because your password manager remembered it for you. So I need your master password to look up those internal passwords.
Right.
Or they'll sit there and say, no, I don't have a password in my email account. Yes, you do.
Yes, you do.
Well, what they need is when you set a password, when you set a master password on something, first, every web browser should require a master password.
Mm-hmm.
And it should say in giant red letters, write this master password down.
Now, do not forget this password. If you forget this password, it loses every other password.
Your host.
Yeah.
Your host. No one can get it back from you.
And in fact, on the latest systems, especially in the Mac world, with the file vault whole disk encryption turned on, if you forget your password, you lose everything on your computer, not just your passwords or files. Without having your password, your data is stored as a blob of noise.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Only your password turns it into readable files.
Which is one reason you want to make sure you have backups.
Backup.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you can also encrypt your backups so that they can't be browsed.
With a different password
With a different password, yeah.
Right. All right, to the phones. Our next caller is Paul from Brighton, New York. What's up, Paul?
Yeah, for a long time I've been using AVG antivirus on my Windows machines. Recently, it just seemed to have expired, so I tried to download and reinstall the free version again.
Yep.
And every time I do that and try to start it, it keeps prompting me to buy their upgraded version, and the free version just does not work. Disabled.
They have changed their free policy a little bit. It's technically free, but you have to register it with an email address every year. And they have added more ads basically to buy their pay version. So you might see a register button to register for another year of free access.
Or also look into Avast.
Yeah, I've used Avast on another machine. Maybe I'll switch to that.
Avast, I've been using that for quite a few years now, and that works fantastic.
And if you're going to uninstall AVG, definitely uninstall it. Run CCleaner, uninstall it with Revo so you really get it out.
Yeah.
Right. I use Revo, yes. So you think Avast is the free version is worthwhile, or should I? Are any of these worthwhile going to the paid versions?
All of them are worthwhile going to the paid versions for no other reason than you're supporting the company that's supporting you.
I grant you that. Yeah.
And they will then make more of the same thing, and that's always a good thing.
Yeah.
People are always saying, "Well, I didn't bother," and then it all goes away, and then they think, "What happened?" Well, you didn't bother.
Yeah,
that's exactly what happened
because you don't support it.
Okay, I guess we have it coming to ourselves,
Exactly.
All right, well, thanks again.
Yeah, thank you. We people always say, well, why should I buy this version? Well, if you want to see the next version, that's how that works. All right, look, we're going to take a quick break. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It's 39 minutes after the hour, and you're listening to the longest-running computer show in the known universe. It is Soundbites right here in the truly great and truly grateful to be member-supported Jazz 90.1.
It's America's longest-running computer show. Back to more sound bites with Nick, Dave, and Steve. Next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 43 minutes after the hour, we have Matt from South Buffalo, New York, on the line. Talk to us, Matt.
Hey, guys. How you doing? I hope y'all had a good New Year and everything and a good holidays.
We did. I hope you did, too.
My thing is, I wanted to comment on this guy's frustration about installing Ubuntu, because I had an old Pentium 4 desktop, and I went through a lot of issues. It was like I thought I downloaded the most recent version, and it was a 64-bit version, but I needed the 32-bit one. And there were some things. I just wanted to let that guy know that you can buy pre-programmed USB sticks that have Ubuntu installed on them through their website. Unfortunately, it's in British pounds, and I don't know if they come from overseas, but I looked on eBay, and they have a few reputable ones that are the brands that are pre-programmed with the operating system on them.
Right. Yes, you can download it and put it on a USB stick, or you can buy USB sticks from various companies. You can download the CD and burn it Linux itself, Ubuntu and a dozen others, are all free to get and use. However,
I did want to mention that they do have pretty good directions if you go to the site. I mean, if he goes to Ubuntu.com and they have like help guides and everything, they give a pretty good tutorial, like step by step, on what you need to do on and how to do it. So I would definitely advocate giving it a try or giving it a shot, because I know you could install do a dual boot too, so you could run it side by side with Windows as well.
Yep. And there's like instructables.com and makeuseof.com, pendrivelinux.com. You can buy one there. The others have installation instructions. And while Linux itself is free, you can buy it on a thumb drive. And of course, they will charge you for that because they're selling you a thumb drive.
Mm-hmm.
But yep. But other than that,
It would be for like amateur user that,
yep.
You know, that they don't know nothing about it. It would be easy. Like, that would be the easiest way to do it. And that's like just the best advice I wanted to give them. So that's all I wanted to say. But I hope everybody has a good weekend. Take it easy.
Great. You too. Have fun. Thanks. Yeah. One of the things is it comes in both 32 and 64 bit versions. And how old is your machine and which one will it take and how much RAM do you have? I have a very old, tiny little laptop that only has 512 meg of RAM, and it runs damn small Linux,
wow.
DSL, and not fast, not tremendously well, but it runs it. And so you can find all those versions. And yeah, maybe a class somewhere, I don't know where at this point, but somewhere a class on how to take an old machine and install.
Yeah, that'd be pretty cool.
Ubuntu. It would actually be a lot of fun. All right, our next caller is Sam from West Henrietta, New York. Hiya, Sam. What's up?
Hi, guys. Thanks for taking my phone call.
Sure.
A couple of days ago, somebody supposedly from Microsoft called me and said he wanted information. I wouldn't give him any.
Good.
I'd like to know, how do I report that, or what's the deal with that? Can they do that? Can someone from Microsoft call me?
No, Mike. No one. Let me say this for everybody listening.
Yeah.
No one from Microsoft will ever call you. No one from Apple will ever call you. No one from anywhere will ever call you. If you want to report something like that, you can report it to the FCC. Directly, Steve's going to put up a link for the computer Consumer Complaint Center, the CCC okay. of the FCC.
But this has been going on for how long? You know,
decades. Yeah.
Yeah, this has been going on. You know, and they try to prey on elderly people and everything else. You know, or folks that don't really understand computers that well, and they prey on it. It's just like the other scam out there that you'll get a splash screen that says your machine is totally infected, call this number. And they want you to turn around and pay them $325. Or otherwise, you know, your machine is infected and it's going to wipe it all out. And they're preying on folks. That, oh, really? And they pay it.
And there's a new one now where it does encrypt your files and you have to pay a ransom to get your stuff back.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
And again, the way to get around that is make sure you have a good backup.
Yeah.
And then just wipe your machine and reinstall it. You're done.
Yep. But a lot of times these companies are, they'll say they're Microsoft partners or they're with Microsoft. And a lot of them will have a very legitimate looking website. So if you try to look up their website. And the problem is technically they may not be doing anything illegal, because the way they word it, we're Microsoft partners. You know, we've been getting reports that your computer is running slow. Okay, they may have, and they offer you a service to clean out your computer. So we've had some of our customers will fight them to get the money back from their credit card company, and it gets tricky because you're buying a service rather than paying for a physical product that's easy to say you didn't get. We even had one of the bad guys submitted a contract to the credit card company saying, no, look, he signed a contract and paid for this service. And they just used a script font to type his name on this boilerplate form. And so it can be tricky once you actually do pay them. But you can report them to the FCC if you got the phone number they used from your call ID log. then you can use that as well as part of your complaint.
I also have a two-step verification. Could someone get in my computer or will my phone ring?
Can someone get in your computer? Once you're logged into your computer, and you let somebody in either inadvertently or by saying yes to these scammers, then they're in. That has nothing to do with any factor authentication because you've already bypassed that yourself by getting into your own computer.
No, I'm saying the guy who did this called me from my phone. He wanted to get in my computer and access through my phone. I said, why would you want to do that? And he kept giving some BS. I finally hung up on the guy.
My
computer's home and my phone was on a job, can he get, I have two step, can he get in my computer?
Not without your help.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, you'd have to let him in, and that's what happens. Some of these guys are so convincing that people let them into their computer to fix the problem.
Yeah.
Gotcha. Okay.
We had one customer, they were so convincing and were taking so long cleaning her computer out that she went to bed and left them in her computer all night.
Oh, my heavens.
Oh, jeez.
And then a year later, they called back and started over again.
Yeah, I bet.
Thanks for your help, guys. I appreciate it.
Thanks.
Yep.
You know, talking about doing Linux, transmuting old computers into Linux machines, I suspect Luor does something like this, but right now they're transitioning to using a new content management system called Pelican, so there's essentially nothing up.
No, what you should do is come up with the class to teach folks. You offer it either on a DVD drive or whatever to take an old laptop and turn it into a Chromebook.
Yeah.
You know, and walk them through that because a lot of folks, whether it's a
Stick it on YouTube.
Yeah, you could.
That's not a bad idea.
You know, and you offer them, you know, they pay for, you know, you shipping them the CD or DVD to stick in their machine, and then they go to that, they get the link to that YouTube, and you walk them through it.
It's not a bad idea.
No, and that way now they've got this old laptop or old desktop that's now a Chromebook. And, oh, by the way, you don't have to worry about viruses or anything else.
That's not a bad idea at all. One of the things that Steve and I were just talking about is Neverware has, of course, their version of Cloud Ready. And I've actually got an old Mac Mini, but it's the PPC version, the Motorola version. And I don't think these guys have a Motorola download for that. So I'm not sure what I can do. I don't think I can do that. The Home Edition, I don't think it has a Motorola version. That's too bad, actually. No, it doesn't seem
there
to.
There is a PowerPC version of Linux somewhere, because I remember running it way back then.
Well, I know there are at least an old version that's PowerPC, but not a Chromebook version.
Yellow Dog?
Yellow Dog was it. But that's, you know, that's not Chromebook. That's, and there aren't many PPC versions of Chromium.
You know, we switched to Intel 11 years ago.
I understand that. I told you I've got decades-old technology just sitting in the closet. When it was no longer viable, I put it in the closet saying, I'm going to do something with this someday. Someday's coming around. I'm retired, and I got time to play.
My 30-year-old Apple III, you know, I need a floppy drive driver for it.
Yep.
So I can get on the internet.
Yep. But this is what I was thinking. If I could gut one of my old laptops and throw a Raspberry Pi in it, it really, at this point, is simply a matter of the right connectors. If you think about it.
Well, all you have to do, you don't even need the Raspberry Pi. All you would have to do is have a hard drive with an operating system and run Kodi. Raspberry Pi is a box.
I understand that. But I understand how much you love Kodi.
No, but
what I'm saying is I want to turn it into a Linux box. That isn't Kodi, that's just a regular computer.
Oh, okay,
and
I get you.
It's running, it's an old 486. The computer itself is a 486 with half a gig of RAM.
Gotcha.
So I got to replace that motherboard. There's no way to add RAM.
Yeah, I got you. All right, I see where you're going with that one.
So that's why, if I can take, you know, it's got a perfectly good keyboard and monitor and you name it in there, everything else is lovely. except that motherboard has to be exchanged. And I suppose I could do a real one, but go ahead.
Yeah, I want to remind everyone that the Apple Cider User Group meeting is this Wednesday, January 11th at 7 p.m. at East High School. Jerry Seward will be talking about how the Internet has changed over the last decade or so. We're also going to be doing some genealogy show software. If the weather is bad, if East High gets closed, the meeting will be postponed. We'll try to put that on our website. So we'll see you Wednesday.
Perfect. And that's at applecider.org. All right, we're done for another week. I want to thank Dave Enright, Steve Ray, everybody who called in. I'm Nick Francesco. It is 55 minutes after the hour. Don't go away. George and what just happened here? I'm sorry. George and Michael are coming in to play the best German music you'll hear all week. It's kind of a ziguration of wonderment. And we'll be back next week with a whole lot more soundbites on member-supported Jazz 90.1, see you in 166 hours.